Okay, well, if you don't know me, my name is Tamar, and my husband Pete and I are some of the pastors here. And I am really excited to get to share today. We've been having this series over the summer called Jesus. It's a pretty good place to start, right? Jesus. And it's been broken up into three parts. And the first part was Jesus seen. And then we talked about Jesus encountered. And now we're talking about Jesus proven. And the last 2 weeks, Pastor Bob really built a case for Jesus proven historically. And then last week, he talked about Jesus proven morally. Today, we're talking about Jesus proven experientially. Now, when we're on a series, Pastor Bob will kind of give us some directions. Sometimes he gives us notes or certain scriptures he wants us to preach on. So when I was waiting for his email, a lot of times he gives us things he wants to study. And it was kind of getting, you know, closer to this Sunday, and I was getting worried. And then he sent me the email, and he just said, I just want you to tell stories. He said, you're a storyteller. Tell people's stories. Tell your story. Tell the stories of how God and his son Jesus have changed people's lives. So I'm pretty excited to just tell stories today. And hopefully you're going to be encouraged by the end that you have a story and that God wants you to share that story of what he's done in your life over and over and over again. So the main premise today is just that the greatest evidence of Jesus' reality is the lives of people that Jesus has changed. And that's all of you. You know, our church is full of stories of the lives that Jesus has changed. And being, pastor and walking with people pastorally, one of the things that I love is I get to see people go from there to here. I get to see people, you know, before. I get to see them in the messy middle, and I get to help them walk through things. And then I get to see when they come out on the other side. And that is so exciting because that's what Jesus does for us. He changes our lives, and he takes us from there to here. And then he takes us from glory to glory. So I really feel like today what Jesus wants to do, he really wants to free us to remember our story. We all have a story, and he wants us to remember it. And he might want us to even go back a little bit and kind of dig into our past and see some of those things where maybe we haven't really talked about them, we haven't really dealt with them, but he wants us to remember our story. I feel like today Jesus wants us to own our stories. We need to own our stories. We need to know what are the things that that we've gone through and where was Jesus in the midst of them. And then I feel like today he wants us to walk away from here compelled to share our stories, because we all have things where we would not have come through it except for Jesus. And those are the things that are going to compel people. When we're compelled to share our stories, people will be drawn to Jesus. They'll be compelled to know about this Jesus that some of us or most of us already know. So today as we're talking, I just want you to think about, what is your story? What are the things that Jesus has done in your life? How has he changed you? How has he made a difference? And even if you don't know Jesus yet, he's still writing your story, so that's okay. You just haven't entered into the part yet where you've really encountered him in a real way. But I want you to be thinking about your story too. So the Olympics are going on. Anybody watching the Olympics? Boo? Just a few of you? Okay. I love the Olympics because of the stories behind the athletes that are in the Olympics. And yes, seeing them do these amazing feats of strength and athleticism and skill and all the discipline that they've put into their training, that's pretty amazing. But I have some pictures here of one of my favorite sports, actually. These guys are amazing. Have you guys seen the divers, the Olympic divers? Every Olympics, I go through, and I look up these faces, and then I just laugh until I cry. Last night, we're watching the Olympics, and it was Michael Phelps, possibly his last race, right, at the Olympics. And I start looking up these pictures, and my brother Andrew and Peter are like, what are you doing? And I'm just sitting there crying. You guys should all go home and just Google Olympic diver faces. It's hilarious. But I don't know any of their stories. One of the stories, though, that has gripped me this year is the Olympic refugee team. Have you guys heard of them? Okay, so it's this team that's comprised of 10 athletes, and they're from all around the world, but they are refugees. So they're not necessarily competing from their home countries. They are competing as a team because they've all fled their home countries because of war or, you know, different atrocities that they're facing there. I've really been following the story of this girl. I want to say her name right. Isra Mardini. Have you guys heard of her? Okay, so she's this 18-year-old girl from Syria, and she was a competitive swimmer there, her and her sister. And because of the war in Syria and what was going on, her and her sister, her family decides they have to flee the country. And like most of the refugees that are fleeing from Syria, they have to cross water. And so they get on this boat, they get on this raft that can only hold 6 people, and there's 20 on the boat. And out of all the 20 people, only Isra, her sister, and I believe one other guy can swim. And they get out into the water, and not too long after, the motor breaks down, and the raft starts taking water on. So Isra and her sister and this other guy get out of the boat, and they swim, and they push the boat for 3.5 hours across the sea. That's amazing. Now, first of all, I'm scared of sharks. So there is that whole part where, like, I can't even believe that they did that. She did say in an interview, though, she said, my sister and I were like, we have no other choice. We're competitive swimmers. We have to get out of this boat. We have to push these people to safety. We would rather die trying than be shamed that we didn't attempt, you know, to push this boat. So they get to Greece, and from Greece, they have to travel for 25 days to get to Germany. And I just think about that. Wow, that's amazing to me. Now, she hasn't won any medals, but that's not what's exciting necessarily to me when I'm thinking of these refugees that are, you know, competing in the Olympics. They're not necessarily winning medals, but I'm so interested in the stories behind what got them to the Olympics. So she's competing. She's a competitive swimmer. And like I said, it's not that, it's not so important that she's won medals, but it's important the adversity that she overcame to get to where she is now. And she's young. She'll probably, you know, she's been training in Germany, and she'll probably go on possibly to win medals. I think that'd be really cool. So real quick, I just want you guys to watch this quick video about the refugee team.
فيجن وتم يمز مناسا
لكن هنمثل ملايين من لاجئين العالم
نيدو فيلج ميزمو دي بوس
مشتاق موندو تو دو نوش بوتسيا
Global number of displaced people has surpassed 65 million.
Now, if I cry watching the faces of the Olympic divers, the first few times I watched that video, I cried watching that. That's amazing. That's so amazing to me, just the adversity that those refugees were facing, that they are still facing, that people who maybe haven't left their countries are still facing. But then I began to think about that and that line. Instead of running from something, what if there was something to run towards? And so when I was thinking about that, I just began to think of my own life. I began to think of the lives of people in this church, the stories that I know. And the way that that video framed that thought, what if we were running, you know, from something, but instead of doing that, we decided to run towards something? And I thought, we're all spiritual refugees, in a sense. We all have these things that maybe, you know, we were comfortable in our country, and, you know, maybe we're comfortable in our lives, but things happen. They could have happened when we were kids. They could have happened when we were adults, but something caused us to flee, and we ran from something. For some of us, it might have been running from rejection, you know, as kids, or being abandoned. And we run from when people hurt us and they break our trust. And we say, I'm never going to let someone hurt me again. I'm never going to trust again. I won't be broken. That was actually another funny thing when I said broken. Katie Ledecky, is that her name? The swimmer? Oh my gosh, she's amazing. I was reading this article that said that when she races or when she's practicing in practice swims, she beats a lot of the men. And another male swimmer was saying how it breaks the men. They can't handle losing to her in swim practice. But so maybe that was your thing. Maybe you've been broken by a girl beating you in athletics. I don't know. I just thought, wow, how fragile are they that, you know, a girl beating them in swimming, it breaks them down. But we all have things that we're running from, in a sense, and it could be before you met Jesus, or it could be now. There could be things that you're running from today. For preparing for this message, I asked one of my friends who's known me since third grade all the way until now, and I just visited her recently, and I said, if you had to say what was the difference between me when you knew me as a kid or knew me as a teenager or young adult and now. And it was interesting that she said, you were really cold and guarded. And she said, you're so transparent and vulnerable now. And I thought, wow, cold and guarded. But then I remembered when I was a young adult, my friends and I were hanging out with these guys, and one of the guys said, you are such an ice princess. And I was like, ice princess? What does that mean? He's like, you are cold. And I hadn't really thought about how much Jesus had changed my life. But that's what I was kind of trying to remember. Because when you've walked with Jesus for long enough, sometimes you're so changed that you forget who you used to be before he really changed your life. So I want to go back to that thing of just keep thinking as I'm talking, what is your story? What is it that you were running from? And what is the thing that you're running towards? I know for myself, I knew Jesus when I was young, and I gave my heart to Jesus when I was 5 years old. I knew who he was. I remember that moment. I remember feeling loved, and I remember feeling accepted. But like a lot of us, I mean, I'm sure how many people in this room, if you are a believer now and you're following Jesus now, have given your life to God 2-3 times. Maybe you gave your life to God as a child, and then you walked away, and you came back. That's a lot of us. And that's kind of what happened. In my childhood, I remember, you know, my parents loved the Lord, but as time went on and as different things happened, I started becoming more cold and guarded. I stopped trusting people as much. And I think there was a part of it too where I was running from what I perceived as a legalistic Christianity. I was running from rules. I was running from legalism. I was running from maybe feeling controlled. I was running from a lot of different things. I was running from my own hypocrisy because I was the kind of kid that was, you know, goody two-shoes on the outside. I didn't do bad things. But in my head, I judged people. And then basically at the end of my senior year, I made some really poor choices. And I found myself in a situation where, you know, I was taken advantage of. And because of that, then there was shame now that I'm running from. So before I was running from these legalistic set of rules, maybe or feeling controlled or having to be vulnerable, now I was running from shame. And how many of you guys know that when you run from your shame, you usually just enter back into that same pain? It becomes a cycle. You try to run, you think you're running a straight line, and it's more like going around a track, like the track and field athletes. You're just... That was another thing. Last night we were watching these guys, and what was the 9,000, 10K, whatever it was. And the front runners were lapping people as they went around. And we said, man, I'd hate to be those guys that they're lapping. But sometimes that's what happens, is we think we're running from something and we just lap. We just go around the track and we just re-enter into that same shame and that same pain. And I got to a place where I just said, enough is enough. Enough is enough. God, I don't even know if you're real. I spent a year and a half doing whatever I wanted, but not really. I spent a year and a half partying, but I just kept entering that same pain and that same shame again and again. And so I got to a point where I said, enough is enough. God, I don't even know if you're real, but if you're real, prove yourself. And so I went off to Youth with a Mission, YWAM, and I went to a discipleship training school there. And that was the moment when I, it wasn't a moment, it was a process, like a 5-month process, where I really encountered God for the first time in a fresh way. Because when I encountered him as a child at 5, I hadn't really done anything wrong at that point, really bad. You know, I didn't have a past as a 5-year-old. I wasn't a bully. I didn't really have much of a past to be saved from. I just knew I wanted to be with Jesus. When I encountered him when I was 19, though, I had a past. I had things that I wanted to be saved and rescued from if he was real. And he did that for me. But it was a process because I didn't just get fixed right away. And I definitely had to trust him, and I had to let down my guard with him and with other people. And I had to try and practice being vulnerable. So fast forward, you know, however old I am, 16, 18 years, whatever, God's done a work in my life. Jesus has changed my life. So before I was running from something, and now I feel more like I'm running towards something. And I've noticed in the past when I share my story with people, because, you know, there's different parts. For some people, maybe it's growing up in the church and you got hurt. And there was offenses that have taken place. And that's a really common story. A lot of us have experienced that. Things don't go the way we want them to. People don't live up to our expectations. And we look for something else. And that was a part of my childhood. So I can talk to somebody about that and we can connect. Or I can talk about being taken advantage of. And that's a really common story for a lot of women. And a lot of women even that are older that maybe have never even revisited that and allowed God to heal that. There's all kinds of things that I can share with someone out of my story, places where he's touched, Jesus has touched them, he's healed them, and I'm not running from something anymore. And every time I would share my story over these, you know, past 18 years or whatever, I would notice two things. One, people were always impacted, which surprised me. I don't know why, but it would surprise me. I would just feel like here I am talking to you and I'm sharing a part of my story. But people would be impacted a lot of times because they had experienced something similar. And then sometimes people would start to cry. And I remember having one friend crying and saying, how? How can you talk about those things? How can you talk about those things? Those things are awful. And I just said, I don't know. They don't hurt me anymore. Jesus has healed that area. And so people would cry. Sometimes they would come back and tell me, wow, after you talked to me about that and you shared your story of what Jesus has done for you, it challenged me to go and look at some things in my life. And I'm going to allow Jesus to heal those parts too. Now that's exciting. To me, that is exciting. Back in the summer of 2003, Ernest Gentile gave a prophecy to City Harvest Church. And he said that God was going to save many in our city. You know, those are always exciting prophecies, right? Woo! God's going to save many in our city. And this is how he said it was going to happen. He said it's going to happen by you, and you're going to reach them by telling your stories. We have to know our stories. We have to know what Jesus has done for us. We have to know what he's done, and we have to be able to talk about it. And I think that's one of the best kinds of evangelism. You know, if you are not the kind of person that loves public speaking, if you're not like a street corner preacher, if you're not the kind of person that just drags people to church with you kicking and screaming, that's not your thing. You know, you want to be a little bit more discreet, or you want them to still like you afterwards. You can share your story with them. And I think that's so cool because you don't have to go to Bible college. You don't have to know the Bible inside and out. You don't have to be some miracle worker that goes around healing people. You don't have to even have a word of knowledge or, you know, something specific for them. You can just talk about what Jesus has done for you. The second thing that I always noticed after I'd shared my story with somebody is I was always reminded of God's goodness and mercy and grace to me. I would think, you know, I would get caught in this thing of, you know, who I am now is who I was then. So if Jesus has changed my life enough, I start to think, this is who I am. And then I would be reminded of who I was. And I would be reminded of how much grace it took for him to take me from there to here. And I would be excited. I'd be thankful. I'd be grateful. I'd be hopeful for what he was currently doing in me. So, whatever I was facing in that moment, I could say, in the future, this is going to be my past. And I know God's going to carry me through to the other side. I would get excited. So I know what I'm running towards now. I'm running towards freedom. I'm running towards authenticity. I'm running towards joy. I'm running towards peace. And all of those things are found in Jesus. One of the things I love about the stories in the Bible is that I used to think when I was a kid that the Bible was a book of heroes. And that, in a sense, you know, the way kids' minds work, everything in the Bible, if the Bible is what, you know, we're supposed to be focusing on and reading and reading these stories, and especially when you're in Sunday school, you get the stories of David and Goliath, right? And the kids walk out of there, and they're like, I'm going to throw my stones at a giant, and I'm going to knock him down. We don't teach the kids about David and Bathsheba in Sunday school. You know, we don't do that. And we say, oh, well, it was just that one little mistake that he made. I mean, he made a few of, I mean, it was one big one. It was a slip up. It was kind of a big one. It was a huge one. He lusted after a woman. Then he went and slept with her. Then she gets pregnant and he has her husband killed to try and cover up for it. It's kind of a big deal. But if you look in the Bible and you start reading through the stories, which is one of the reasons why sometimes, you know, when my kids are telling me, Naya told me one time, Mom, I'm reading Genesis. And I said, let me help you. Let me help you read Genesis and kind of walk you through some of those stories in there. But all of their mistakes are right there in black and white for us to read. All of their failings, and maybe it's not all of them, but they sure put some really nasty ones in there. Some things that, you know, we wouldn't want put out there for everyone to read. But it's all a part of their story. And so their mess ups are included. And when you think about the ways that people messed up and how God still was with them, it's kind of mind boggling. You've got people that lied. You've got parents that had favorites. They favored certain kids. And when they did, it didn't turn out well, so don't play favorites with your kids. They, you know, siblings that had rivalries that ended in murder. There's some big things in there. There's prophets that were depressed, and there's prophets that God told them to go and tell a city, you know, tell this city to turn towards me. And the prophet throws a fit and runs the other way and says, I don't want to tell them about you. I don't want to tell them to repent. And then when he finally goes and does it, and the city turns to God, he gets mad at God. He's mad. He wanted revenge. He wanted that city to be nuked. We've got all kinds of things in the Bible. You know, one of the things that I, when I was looking through some of the stories, is how many lives were ruled by fear? How many of the people's lives were ruled by fear, and how much those kinds of things, like fear, repeat themselves in generations down, and they go down the line if you're not careful. You know, Abraham had this beautiful wife, Sarah, and he was so worried about her. He was so worried that she was so beautiful that the king would see Sarah and have him killed. And so he lies and says, you know, she's my sister. And the king almost, like, you know, does something with her. And I thought, wow, he was, you know, God was already leading him at that point, but he was so ruled by fear that he did something drastic like that. And there's people that, you know, have done all other kinds of things. And you open up your Bibles, just go through it. But here's the thing. If we leave out the ugly parts, it takes away from what Jesus has actually done in our lives. We like to sugarcoat our stories. And I'm not talking about, okay, if you, you know, have a past or you're currently in some stuff, that you go around to every single person you meet and give them all the gory details of your life. I'm not talking about that. There's wisdom. But to leave out the ugly parts of your story when you're sharing your story means that a lot of times you don't have something that you were running from, maybe, and so it's not very clear what you're running towards. And they don't have to be these big, dramatic conversion stories. It doesn't have to be, I was a drug addict, and now I'm, you know, not. And it doesn't have to be, I was an alcoholic, and now I'm sober. It doesn't have to be things like that. It could be, I was ruled by fear. I was ruled by my insecurities, and God set me free. It could be, I was anxious. I was anxious. That's where I was. But now I'm living in peace. It's so important to tell our stories. And one of the things I love about being a part of Set Free, Set Free is our Tuesday night ministry. And one of the things I love about it is the stories, people giving their testimonies. And I love hearing how people got from there to here. They tell their stories. And if you're in one of the Genesis groups, the Genesis process groups, you get to go through that process too. You get to go from there to here. And I love hearing what God is doing in people's lives. So if you're bored with Christianity, if you're bored with your relationship with God, you need to get around people who are doing what you've forgotten to do. People who are telling their stories. People who are owning their stories. They remember the ugly, and they talk about the ugly, and they know what Jesus did for them and how he's changed them. Tell how you got from there to here. Celebrate the process that you're in. You might not feel like you've arrived, and that's actually a good thing because we're always in process, but talk about it. Don't downplay who you really were before Jesus changed you, and just remember the kind of person that you were so that you can remember what Jesus has done for you, so that you can remember that he's not done with you yet. There is no arriving, really. We're always going to be running towards something. So tell your story. Maybe start by writing your story. Ask people that knew you or still know you right now, what was I like before Jesus changed my life? Talk about the mistakes you've made. Talk about your failures and your regrets. You know, right now, there's definitely this feeling of that, you know, there always is a generational gap, right? When the generations maybe don't understand each other or get offended by each other. And one of the things I've noticed is with the younger generation, they want authenticity. They want people to be real with them. These are people that are living their lives on social media, putting things out there constantly. And when they get around someone from the older generation, they might just look at them as, oh, you've served the Lord for a long time. You're probably a good person. But if you took a younger generation person and you said, here's what I've been through. Let me tell you about what's gone on in my life. Let me tell you what I was running from. And let me tell you what I'm running towards now. And if you were to talk about the things you're still struggling with, do you know how much that would mean to someone from the younger generation? Do you know how much that would mean to them to realize, wow, God's not done with me yet. He's not done with you yet. And you seem like such a nice person. You seem so cleaned up. And you did that? You went through that? It's powerful. We need to get good with telling our stories. Tell anyone who will listen. Tell anyone who will listen. Maybe you have a short version and maybe you have a really long version, but tell anyone who will listen. And this is what I want you to tell them. Do you guys know that old song, the Look What the Lord Has Done? Anybody? Raise your hand if you. Okay, I want you all to sing it with me. Maybe stand up. I don't know. Maybe clap your hands. Look what the Lord has done. Look what the Lord has done. He healed my body, he touched my mind, He saved me just in time. Oh, I'm gonna praise his name. Each day is just the same. Come on and praise him. Look what the Lord has done. Okay, just so you know. Just so you know, I was going to try and have someone with a really amazing, like, gospel voice come up here and do it. But that's not the point. That's not the point. The point is that I just sang in front of all of you, and you're going to forget it, okay? But just remember, the look what the Lord has done. Look what he's done. Talk about how he healed your body. We have so many testimonies in this church of people that have been physically healed in their body. Talk about how he touched your mind. What were you struggling with before that Jesus touched and he healed? Talk about it. Talk about what the Lord has done. Let's give him praise. Let's get excited about what he's done, because there are so many people that want nothing to do with our Jesus because we've lost our joy. We need to have joy about what he's done. So here's the thing. We need to tell our stories, and here's why. Number one, when we tell our stories, it frees us up to be honest. Jesus was very honest. When I look through the things he said to people, I cringe sometimes. Why would you say that to somebody that's going to hurt their feelings, or they're going to get offended? Why would you do that? He was honest. He knew what was in men's hearts, so he wasn't looking for approval for them. He wasn't looking for applause or acceptance. He was honest. Now, yes, we need to tell the truth in love. I don't mean, like, you know, brutally honest, but it keeps us honest with ourselves. Because if we know that God works all things together for the good of those that love God and are called according to his purposes, we don't have to sugarcoat the ugly parts anymore, because those all become part of what God is doing in our lives. And just that idea that with it being honest, that we don't have to be bound by our shame. I have this friend, Sarah, and she says, what the Lord, or we uncover, the Lord freaking uncovers. And she's just kind of a raw person like that. But she says that, what we cover, the Lord, you know, or what we uncover, the Lord freaking covers. And what she means by that is the things that we bring into the light, we don't have to worry about, because then God takes care of them. And she says, okay, so he's got that now. I don't have to worry about my reputation. I don't have to worry about if people know my story. She's got an amazing testimony. But what if everything that we ever did was written in a book, every bad thing you've ever done was written in a book, like the Bible, and out there for everyone to see and everyone to read? Who wants that book out there? Who wants that book out there? Nobody. But we can be honest about the things that have gone on in our lives, and we can say, God, that's for you to deal with, and I'm going to let you deal with that. But here's the thing. When we do that, it's freeing to our souls. It is so freeing to be honest. It is so freeing to know that you don't have to worry about your reputation. Brené Brown says, when we deny the story, it defines us. When we own the story, we can write a brave new ending. Meaning, when we deny that we were abandoned by our alcoholic father as a kid, that abandonment defines us. When we deny that the death of our child was so much pain we couldn't bear, that grief defines you. When we say, okay, that person that left, you know, my divorce, that was too much. I don't know what to do with that. When we deny the part that maybe we played in it, that's still going to define you when you get married again. We don't want to deny the story. We want to be honest with our stories, and we want to allow God to help us write a brave new ending. Number two, why do we need to tell our story? Because it keeps us humble. Humility is a good thing, because like I said before, we can tend to think that who we are now is who we were back then. And we might not realize how much Jesus has changed us. We might not realize how prideful we were, how offensive we were, how maybe we had zeal for the Lord, but we were really harsh with people. we might not remember how cold and guarded we were. If we forget who we are, if we forget who we were, it takes the glory away from what Jesus has done. Because then we start to think that who I am now and this good person that I am now, doing my good works now, is who I've always been. And it denies what Jesus has done in your life. So it's good to allow, you know, Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith, it's good for the focus to be on him. And it's good that our story should be about becoming like the one who is good, not just being good now or doing good things. Number three, why do we need to tell our story? Because it gives us hope. We are such forgetful creatures. I'm a very forgetful person. I forget things all the time. It's really bad. And I'm hoping that someday my memory will come back to me, but I truly forget conversations, and I don't know what to do about that. So if I can remind myself of my story, if I can remind myself of what Jesus has done, then I can remember that God's going to still move in my life. I can remember of who I was and that he's going to take me to a new place, because it's like the Israelites. I'm always baffled by that story. As soon as they leave Egypt, the first trial that comes up, why did you take us out here to kill us? They all start saying, we should go back to Egypt. Why did we do this? And sometimes we can be like that. We can trust God and step out in a new way. God can tell us to do something. And as soon as something goes wrong, we start freaking out, saying, God, why did you bring me here? You know, and we forget that he's delivered us before. He's going to deliver us again. And that he doesn't lead us anywhere that he hasn't already gone before and where he hasn't already provided a way through. If we forget God's goodness in the past, in our past, then we will complain in our present reality. And then we start to lose hope for the future. But if we can remember God's goodness towards us in our past, we won't be able to help but be thankful in our present reality. And then we can't help but have hope for the future. It's so important to know what God has done. And it's so important to tell our story. So what has Jesus done for you? What is the difference that he's made in your life? What are the ugly parts in your story that God wants to redeem and make beautiful? What are you running from, or what were you running from? And what are you running towards? Could you frame it in that context? If someone was sitting right next to you, would you be able to say, I was running from anxiety and fear, and now I feel like I'm running towards peace? I just want to read this real quick. In 1 Timothy 1, I'm using the Message Bible. Don't worry. If you were like worried that I haven't opened my Bible yet or that I'm using the Message version, we are a very balanced church, and normally there's tons of scriptures, and we do actually read the Bible, guys, and we actually try to live it out. But in 1 Timothy 1, verse 12, this is Paul talking. Now, Paul was one of those people who had a majorly dramatic conversion story, okay? He went from evil to saint, you know, that was his story. But he says here, and I was, in studying for this message, I was going through Acts and just the different books of the Bible in the New Testament where it tells Paul's story and where he's giving his testimony. And I love how he didn't leave out the ugly parts. Real quick, here's some of the things he would say. Or here's some of the things he did. So, you know, when Stephen, the martyr, was stoned, a man full of the Holy Spirit and great faith, when he was being stoned, Paul was there holding the coats of the men that were stoning him. And it says he was giving his approval. When, you know, a few verses later, Saul began to destroy the church, going from house to house, he dragged off men and women and put them in prison. And then later on, before he has his on the road to Damascus experience, Saul was still breathing out murderous threats against the Lord's disciples. Right up until the minute, right before he really met Jesus and encountered Jesus in this dramatic way, he was really, really awful. And he talked about it when he would give his testimony. when I was thinking about what was he running from, he was literally running from Jesus. He was running from the truth. He was running from the idea of Jesus as God's son. And then, you know, in Philippians, he talks about what he's running towards, and it's knowing Christ in all of his sufferings. Okay, so 1 Timothy here, 1:12. I'm so grateful to Christ Jesus for making me adequate to do this work. He went out on a limb, you know, entrusting me with this ministry. The only credentials I brought to it were invective. I had to look that one up. It means abusive. and witch hunts and arrogance. But I was treated mercifully because I didn't know what I was doing, didn't know who I was doing it against. Grace mixed with faith and love poured over me and into me, and all because of Jesus. Here's a word you can take to heart and depend on. Jesus Christ came into the world to save sinners. I'm proof, public sinner number one, of someone who could have never made it apart from sheer mercy. And now he shows me off, evidence of his endless patience to those who are right on the edge of trusting him forever. I love this version because, you know, it says he went on a limb, you know, entrusting me with this ministry. And all of you have personal ministries, things that, good works that God has set out for you to do. It could be at your work, it could be at your school, it could be in your home, it could be in your neighborhood. There are good works, and there's a personal ministry that God has for you. And, you know, God went out on a limb trusting you with that ministry. But he took a chance on you. And it says he shows me off now as evidence of his endless patience. I'm one of the more stubborn ones. Stubborn people, raise your hand. Don't be stubborn, raise your hand. There are some of us, some of God's kids, we are way more stubborn than others. And we do run from God when he tells us to do things, or we do say, I'm right and I don't want to hear, you know, what you're saying. But God has endless patience, endless patience. If you're a stubborn one, you know that. You know that God has endless patience for all of your rebellion. The last part there, though, is what I love. He shows me off to those who are right on the edge of trusting him forever. And that's what I want to encourage you in. There are people around you in your spheres of influence who are right on the edge of trusting him forever. And maybe they need to hear your story. Maybe they need to hear it again. You're like, well, I've already told them 20 times and they haven't asked Jesus into their heart yet. Tell them again. Tell them again how Jesus took you from there to here. Tell them. Maybe get a little excited about it. Maybe they're not listening because you're not excited. Maybe they don't want what you have right now. Get excited. Let him fill you with joy because of what he's done. The worship set this morning, everything was about reminding our souls, you know. Let's not forget the joy of our salvation. Let's not forget why we're here. Because, guys, I'm sorry. If there's nothing, if you don't have joy, you shouldn't be in a stuffy building on a Sunday morning, right? If Jesus hasn't done something for you, if you're not pursuing him wholeheartedly, then you don't have to be here. But if you're going to be here, have some joy. If you're going to be here, remind yourself of what God has done. Remind yourself, man, he's so good. I have my brother here today, and I was asking him, he's sitting out on the front porch with me while I'm trying to study, and I said, okay, I love this idea of instead of running from something, you know, we have something to run towards. What would you say you were running from, and what are you running towards? And right now, his personal testimony is, I did it all, and now I don't. And I said, no, I need you to give me more than that. I need you to, come on, work with me. What were you running from? What are you running towards? And you know, he has his story, and he can share it. But basically, through a set of circumstances, you know, he's here up in Washington. I've prayed for this day to come for so many years. God answers prayers. He was living down in San Diego, guys. So for someone to move from San Diego to Washington, you know it has to be God. I'm just saying. And so I asked him, you know, what were you running from? And as he started talking, it was really clear. He was running from the pressures and expectations of others, or the pressure to perform. He was running from a joyless religion, what he perceived as was a joyless religion. And I said, what are you running towards? And he said, Jesus, you know, a relationship with Jesus, the one who never lets me down, a loyal father, a faithful friend. I'm running towards someone who knows me and accepts me just as I am.